Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mark, Rebecca, we have a very serious topic on the table today.
Yes, yes, we do. I know there's been a lot of buzz with S386, and now...
Well, now 1044.
Exactly. It's merged with HR 1044, and things are still happening, not changing in the way that we want, but really merging together. And I know that Mona Shaw & Associates, your firm, has put together a petition for this.
We have, which Rebecca would love to talk to about, and she'll mention, I'm sure, in the course of this podcast. But more than the petition, what we would really like our listeners to understand is just how much people don't really understand the implications of this particular piece of legislation.
You're right, Mona. This bill not only affects EB-5, which of course is a big concern for us here on the show, as well as our listeners, but this really impacts all of employment-based immigration. And there's been over 3,200 signatures on this petition so far, and the comments coming in from not just us, but the community really resonate, such as Hamid is saying that HR 1044 is the worst bill that could be passed for researchers, professors, and people with PhDs who are going to continue their impactful research in the U.S., Chuck is saying this is not a solution, but merely a divergence of issues of visa abusers to all immigrants in the world. He goes on to talk about how this is really going to destroy diversity.
Exactly, Mark. And there's a lot of sentiment. There's a lot of emotions going on out there. You know, there's a lot of opposition. And today we're having a roundtable podcast discussion on this very topic. And we'd like to welcome Michael Harris, Tammy Fox, and Lee Lee for this.
Thank you, everybody, for this roundtable discussion. Michael, I think people would like to know, first of all, a little history of the bill.
Thank you, Mona. HR 1044, the Fairness for High-Skilled Immigrants Act of 2020, was first introduced in February of 2019 into the House of Representatives. The main sponsor was Zoe Lofgren of California. The bill stayed there for quite a while until it was actually passed in July of 2019. It was later attempted through a companion bill to be introduced into the Senate, where they tried multiple times to bring it up, but they were not able to get their version of the bill through. Finally, just last week, on December 2nd, the Senate, through unanimous consent procedure, agreed to pass HR 1044 with some additional amendments to it.
So, well, Michael, we do think that they just managed to slip that through when no one was looking,
yes.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, we smile, but it's really not a smiling matter. Tammy, it's really going to affect EB-5, right?
It's going to decimate EB-5. Affect it would be an understatement, Mona. It did and it didn't catch us off guard because Senator Lee has been continually trying to obtain a vote on unanimous consent on what was his 386 bill. And realizing that there would be no time for a conference committee to meet on 386 and merge it with 1044. Instead, the bill that passed on December 2nd by unanimous consent was HR 1044 as amended by Senator Scott. Senator Scott added several amendments that make the bill less palatable to the House.
Well, Tammy and Michael, what amendments were added to that bill?
There were two amendments. The first one limited how many H-1B visa holders could adjust in any given year. The first 9 years, only 70%. So at least 30% of visas for non-H-1Bs, which isn't very many. And after 9 years, it would drop to 50%. So the first 9 years, pretty much everybody who gets an immigrant visa would be on an H-1B.
The second was a complete ban on any person, a citizen of China, of mainland China, that has any affiliation with the Chinese military or the Communist Party.
From adjusting status.
From adjusting status or applying for an immigrant visa.
Yeah, well, that's actually much more wider than it seems on paper for people, because a lot of high officials do have really what's called a passive affiliation. So it is really quite a racist term if you think about how it would affect the Chinese.
It was purposefully put in there. And from what I understand, it's very much supported by President Trump and maybe somewhat of a payback for COVID. From what I understand, of course, I can't be sure about this. But one of the things that's stopping this bill from getting appended to a spending bill is this provision, because it's a non-starter for the House and it's hold firm for the Senate. But if the Chinese provision is taken out, and we certainly don't agree with the Chinese provision, but we also don't agree with the contents of this bill, then this bill could easily be attached to a spending bill.
Well, before we discuss how we could move forward, let's understand a little more about the figures. Lee, it's wonderful to have you on the podcast, and I know you've done a tremendous amount of work relating to how the estimated times would work. So let me understand, first of all, let's just talk about EB5. If this bill goes into effect without any transitionary period, how would that affect EB5?
In order to understand how the standard version of the bill could impact EB5 in terms of the visa wait times, we have to look at the current EB5 visa backlog. So the data that are used to look at the backlog is the latest data that were provided by the Department of State. Specifically, the data was provided by Mr. Charlie Oppenheim, and he is the chief of the Visa Control Office in the Department of State that control the visa bulletins every month. There are more than 49,000 actual EB5 visa applicants waiting in the National Visa Office. These applicants already received an approved 5-6 petition and are waiting for their visas in the front line of the backlog. And among these applicants, there are about 44,800 of them are from China, and more than 1,600 of them are from Vietnam. The two countries are experiencing backlog right now.
And the rest are from the rest of the world.
And we may not know how many Chinese or others are, where are they in the waiting line ahead of the others, right?
Nope, we do not have the data on the priority day. And I have to say, this is only one part of the backlog. We still have a lot of investors with a pending I-526 petition in USCIS on top of the applicants in the National Visa Office to wait for their visa numbers.
Yeah, that's correct. How many thousands of applications that are just sitting there for a visa?
With priority dates that could just jump into the front of the line based on how long they've been waiting, right?
Right. But I think looking at the history of most projects and how the big regional centers went out to China, I think it's fair to say that more than 2/3 of the backlog would be Chinese.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point, Mona. So basically, the way we figure out what the wait time would be is we look at the longest line for EB5, and anybody who files now would be at the end of the longest line. So for example, right now, regional centers are at August of 2015, and so are non-regional centers, and so whomever files now would be behind the longest line. Now, we all know that the line isn't moving month by month, that really there's about a 10 or 15 year backlog for Chinese. They will not be helped by the lifting of per country quotas because they basically form the whole line for EB5. 85% of applicants for the EB5 program are Chinese. So they're really not going to be helped because they stand behind each other. On the other hand, any other nationality who expected to not be in any line because there's only a small line, for example, for Vietnam and no line for any other nationality, will now stand behind the Chinese. And so for somebody with a pending 526 today, who's from, say, for example, Venezuela, would expect to be in line maybe for 10 to 15 years.
I believe Lee did the figures. Lee, could you give us some more insight?
If we can step back on the visa backlog. So in addition to the 49,000 actual applicants and NVC, Charlie also gave us his estimate. By saying estimate, it's a fancy way of saying he guessed. So he estimated that the pending 526 petitioners in USCIS would require nearly 34,000 EB5 visa numbers once their 526 are approved. So that means if we combine these two figures, There are more than 83,000 applicants waiting in the visa backlog right now for their visa. So for any investors who sign up today, these investors will have to wait.
So what is the wait time, Lee, for other countries outside of China?
I love you have been always so direct, Mona. It's a very complicated question. I will try to answer that not only with my best knowledge, but also with a lot of assumptions. That means you are going to hear a lot of ifs. So if the visa backlog is correct with 83,000 applicants on the line and investors filing today, and if the per-country cap bill, naming HR 1044, is signed into law today, that means everyone have to wait until all these applicants receive their visa numbers in order to have any visa numbers available to new applicants. That means the wait time could be, again, could be 8 years.
Regardless.
Right. Regardless, this investor's country of birth.
At least that much, right?
Michael, there is a provision in the bill for transition that would affect some this somewhat, right? It won't be that it will be 8.3 years from next year onwards if we are part of the transition. I'm saying we, meaning EB5.
Right. There is a 2-year period before this bill actually starts to take effect. And I think Tammy can also help me with, I think it's based on when you get approved, right?
First of all, the bill would become effective October 1st, 2022, if passed now. The transition period is 9 years. It provides a set aside of visas for any nationals of countries that do not form the two largest takers of visas. So that would probably the two largest takers of visas would be India and China. So there's a 30% set aside year one, 25% year two, 20% year three, 15% year four, 10% year four, five, and six, and it goes down from there. But actually, Mona, that set aside is so inconsequential that it really is not going to provide any help for EB-5 at all. And because EB-5 processing is taking so long, the hold harmless provisions that were in the bill originally in the Durbin bill have now been stripped out in favor of an early adjustment filing that will not be available to people who are in EB-5 category. So for example, EB-1s, 2, and 3 will be able to file an adjustment application 2 years after an approved I-140, but there's no such relief for EB-5. It's got the harshest consequences for the EB-5.
It really is. Nobody would, in their right minds, would come and invest in the EB-5 program if this goes through like this.
It's an EB-5 killer. Yeah. To me, it's really shocking that right after the investment amounts were raised, a year after, 900,000 to 1.8 million, that we would basically then tell investors, I'm sorry, now you have to, you invested, but we're changing the rules in the middle of the game, and now it's a 10-year wait for you. That's absolutely outrageous. And if another country did that to U.S. citizens investing in that country, we would think they were a real banana republic. And I have to tell you, it's just not acceptable. And if regional centers and project developers aren't screaming and yelling, then quite honestly, they deserve what they get because they ought to be outraged. Do not take your eye off the ball. There's a lot of push by tech, and this can and will happen if people do not really protest it.
I couldn't agree with you more, Tammy. And that is one of the reasons why there are groups like the group that yourself and Michael are part of. Since we've managed to get a petition out on change.org, which we'll discuss shortly, but we have been the recipients of so much hate Twitter, hate mail, negative Google reviews. We're not out there to be against anyone. We are out there to help all immigrants, right?
Mona, you say something very important. And I told you before we got on this podcast, my whole car was keyed. And I represent many, many Indian nationals, and I want them to get residence. And I don't want their children to age out. But I could think right off the top of my head of 10 fixes that would be clean fixes that cure the backlog for good and wouldn't destroy diversity and workforce immigration for the rest of the world. And we immigration lawyers, we are the experts in immigration, but tech crafted this bill without immigration lawyers in a way that really provides only a mechanism for H-1Bs to be able to get residence for the next decade. And the sad thing is if you do the numbers, in 10 years from now, the India backlog will be even worse than it was before.
Right. Yes. Yes.
This isn't a cure.
Exactly.
And, this destroys workforce immigration.
It really does.
Lee, I have one question. Even with all of this, are the Chinese helped? Because the Chinese in the EB5 currently have a 15 to 16 year backlog. How much do the Chinese go down by?
Based on my statistics, again, I would like to give you a quick answer, but I cannot because there are so many assumptions, the moving part here. I just mentioned, based on the estimates provided by Charlie, there are nearly 57,000 visa applicants in the Chinese backlog right now. So if we look at what's happening right now with the pre-country caps in place, the wait time for these Chinese applicants largely depends on how many unused EB-5 visas every year that are left. But however, based on the volume of 526 approvals from USCIS, I estimate on average, I think 5,000 EB-5 visas would be available to China annually.
So you're looking at a reduction of 3 years, perhaps?
Right. From 11 years wait time as it is to maybe 8 years if the HR 1044 was passed.
And quite frankly, my math doesn't show that. I mean, because Chinese form most of the line and there are really the rest of the world does not stand in the way of Chinese, they're really not going to benefit from this. In an EB1 or EB2 or EB3 world, they might benefit because they form a very small part of the line. But there's such a significant presence in the EB5 world that this really will not impact them in any favorable way, but it will destroy the expectations of non-Chinese.
Yeah, I think in the long run, this is a quick way of getting things faster, getting those who are in the front of the line, getting there faster. But in the long run, everyone's going to end up in this long backlog. It's going to hurt everyone. No one's thinking long term. You know, we're thinking quick fixes. We need to think about what's going to be right for everyone. How are we going to affect the rest of the world and bringing everyone here fairly? So Mona, what is it that we can do? What is it that we can all do to make sure?
Let me throw it out. Michael, what do you suggest? What can we do at this point other than scream?
Well, other than scream, well, one thing I've suggested to several hundred investors that I'm in a group with, they should be asking their lawyers, what are they doing to protest this? That's one of the things, because this has to be a grassroots movement, I'm afraid, because we're not getting a lot of attention from this at the moment. So that's one thing. Could also see some reform, obviously, with EB-5 on the derivative visa count, but that's gone nowhere at this point, despite litigation there.
And see, I see a different perspective here. This battle is not going to be won by the lawyers, period. While we may have skin in this game, we don't have that much clout on the Hill. But who has the clout on the Hill? The regional centers, the project managers, the project owners, the developers. And, you know, they have their senator and their congressman's ears. They have paid lobbyists. Let them go in there and say, this is absolutely outrageous. We have all these people who have invested hundreds of thousands to millions in our community and into job creation. And now we're going to change the rules in the middle of the game. It's not okay.
Precisely.
We're not in the hundreds of thousands, we're in the billions. And EB-5 can bring in $9 billion a year at a time when we really need jobs and an economic boost in this country.
When I was talking hundreds of thousands, I was talking about individual investors who have in good faith put forth funds in order to get their residents in what would otherwise not be such a great investment. And if you change the rules in the middle of the game, you destroy the entire program.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what is happening. And if the developers and the project managers and the regional centers and the investors don't start to get involved in this and call their congressmen and call senators, and for investors, they need to call the regional center managers and the project managers and insist that they get on the Hill and start fighting.
We need regional centers to reach out to their investors. We need a grassroots movement to swell up here. It can't just be one group, one person. We need everyone really to do this. So regional centers really need to have a call to action to their investors. I see one group with several hundred investors, and one investor noted he's in a project right now with 600 investors right now. And this is the promise that he was given when he came here or when he started to do this, that he was not going to have the blanket essentially pulled out from under him. So we need more people to realize the news media even, in fact, is, I think, asleep on this right now, too.
It's really outrageous. And the other thing, too, is this Indian voice has been very good at being proponents of the elimination of per country quotas and proponents of this bill. They are calling every congressman and senator's office. They are deluging the switchboards. But the investment community is sitting there quietly looking around, waiting for somebody else to do their bidding. And it isn't going to happen.
Well, Tammy, unfortunately, I think that they don't get it. They don't understand there's not enough out there. We are trying. We are pushing. So we are members of leadership in IIUSA, and we do know that leadership is very aware. And they are trying to work with Senator Grassley and others to see where EB-5 can fit in. But my feeling here is that we need to be more aggressive.
Yes.
For our listeners out there, we have a petition out. Just 2 days ago, we took the lead and have a petition on change.org. For those who are listening, please, please sign on. It's called Don't Kill U.S. Employment Visas and EB-5 with S-386 or H.R. 1044. We ask that everyone go on and sign this. In the 2 days that we put this up, we've had over 3,200 signatures, and these are going out to Congress. It's going to get attention. And it's not just the EB-5 world, right? This is affecting every EB employment visa. So we have a lot of base that we know that are out there fighting, even the high-skilled workers. They're fighting for it because they know there's going to be long backlogs in the long run.
So, Michael, if I was a scientist coming from Bulgaria or some small country and all of this went into effect and I had a cancer cure, could I just come in and get my visa like I can now?
Not from overseas, because all the embassies are
closed. No, I'm meaning right now.
Ouch, nothing's open.
But in the long run, right? If they're having this, if we're going to get pushed back, and let's say someone's coming from, like for Iran or other countries, or like Mona said, Bulgaria, because these are smaller countries, they have smaller numbers, they're going to get pushed back now to the back of the line.
Right, correct. Especially if they're waiting right now with an I-140 pending.
My point that I'm trying to get across is that we still want to bring the brightest and the best from the whole world, Michael, right?
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And if this comes in, we will lose out on that.
It's the brightest. It's the best. It's the most talented people. We have major league sports. Baseball is a really important sport to this country. And many of those athletes are from Latin America or Korea, more and more in Japan. What are they going to have to do? They're going to have to languish in a non-immigrant visa for 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. So we're losing not just talent, we're losing skill, we're losing money.
And jobs.
All these things that make a difference in the U.S.
Right. The two of the, or one of the vaccines that was developed by, I think, a foreign immigrant couple.
Yes.
They happen to be billionaires, but they're not American citizens.
Tammy, I know you've been speaking a lot on this subject. What kind of response are you getting, though, once people do understand what the implications mean?
A horror. That would best describe it. Disbelief and horror. And quite frankly, not understanding how any legal body could be neutral here, because this is such a do harm to the rest of the world. And, you know, the Indian nationals often try to twist this as being racist or whatever.
Oh, yes.
We are the furthest from racist,
yes.
But we want to maintain diversity. I mean, imagine for 10 years, there'll be, since there are virtually no Black, no Jewish, no Hispanic Indians, no European Indians. Basically, you're going to see the end of diversity in immigration in America. And nobody wants that either.
Well, I certainly don't want that. And I hope that key decision makers on the Hill don't want that either. Michael, let me ask you something. I know that S-386 and H.R. 1044 has merged. What does somebody look for now? Where should our listeners go to get more information?
Well, you can, of course, go to congress.gov to find it, but it's too confusing, I think, for anyone to really go through the tables of the different bills that are out there. That's a really good question. How does someone continue to follow this?
It's a good question. And the problem is as we're holding this podcast, this is happening.
Yeah.
This is in play. Mm-hmm. And the best people to monitor this, quite frankly, are lobbyists. Because they pull the bills and they look at what's happening and they look at what's being included and they're talking to the legislative aides in the Senate offices. And who has these lobbyists? Well, the aid coalition, our coalition that Michael and I are part of, we have a lobbyist. and people can fund our lobbyists because every month we cough up money to continue that fight. And really, every regional center is involved with lobbyists. Every project is involved with lobbyists. These are wealthy developers, and they have a lot of clout. And you really need to call on them to step up to the plate.
And if I may jump in here, as some the trade association of the EB5 regional center industry, as Mona mentioned, IIUSA is very engaged with a lot of congressional office on the Hill. And we have been worked very hard to inform them the impact of this legislation.
But we really need to reach out to our Congress folk and tell them we are in favor of anything, which is good, but we need diversity. We need smart immigration.
When is it too late? Where are we at this point? How long do we have? Is it going through? Do we think it's going to go through this year?
I've written about this in a blog piece. I do not see this going through right now because there is a lot of adjustment that has to be done. And there are parts of this bill which are unpalatable. However, I am worried about this slipping through just the same way that the S-386 slipped through and being perhaps attached to the appropriations bill or brought up in the next Congress.
Right. This Congress is ending on
January 3rd for the Congress and January 20th for the new president.
Right. So this would all die down. I don't know what dynamic has changed, but I know that the Democrats have lost more people in the House, obviously, and we'll have to see who controls the Senate.
I don't think it's a Democrat or it's a Republican matter, Michael, because if you look at who's supporting right. this bill, there's a lot of Democrats who are supporting it, even Kamala Harris herself.
Right.
And
yes.
I don't think they understand the implications.
Right. 1044 passed 365-65 in the House.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it's a bipartisan piece of legislation, and I think they really just don't understand the overall implications. And that's why, as Tammy says, we've just got to get out and make some noise. And with any luck, Tammy, this week goes by with legislation issues relating to all the appropriations bill and the stimulus. They won't have time for this, and we might have a little bit more time to actually lobby and get the information out, if we can get our voices heard.
Yeah, I agree. We all have voices. One thing my parents always taught me is don't expect somebody else to stand up for you. Stand up for yourself. If this doesn't mean enough for you to fight, it's not going to mean enough for somebody else to fight. Everybody has skin in this game, and you really got to go out there and fight because EB5 is on the line here.
Famous last words, Tammy, I couldn't agree more. But you did mention earlier that you had a number of fixes that Congress should be looking at. Are we looking at more visas?
There are many things. Number one, there is construction of the law would allow for not counting of derivatives.
Correct.
So a new administration can find, and actually Cyrus Mehta and myself once briefed this for the Obama administration, of how the way this statute is written, derivatives really do not need to be counted. This could really be done without even a legislative fix. More visas would certainly help. Early filing of adjustments with CSPA protection and EADs, that would certainly be beneficial. And I'm not talking about the type of early filing that has been put in the HR 1044, because that doesn't help EB5. Another fix would be exempting national interest and extraordinary ability from the quota. Why do we have a quota on, oh, we have too many people in the national interest. Oh, you have to go home because even though you're in our national interest, you're one too late.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. We actually have too many exceptional COVID researchers right now.
It doesn't make sense. If somebody's extraordinary or in the national interest, we should be encouraging these people to come, not setting any quota.
Right.
So there's a fair amount that we could be doing that we're not doing to propose other solutions. Also, recovery of unused visas in past years. A flush of 50,000 or 60,000 unused visas would certainly help the backlog. Now, these numbers mm-hmm. haven't moved since 1990. Time for them to move.
We need a political shift, really, in this country regarding the attitudes about high-skilled immigration, about employment-based immigration, the economic effects from especially employment-based immigration based on companies that are established here, like Google, like Adobe, like Microsoft now that's run by an immigrant, what it's doing for this country. We have forgotten that in this country, what immigrants do
for us. The immigrants are not the patsy for the economic troubles of the economy. The immigrants should not be blamed for any difficulties. In fact, the studies show that they're leading to job creation because of their work in this country.
Since Michael talked about job creations, job creation is everything about EB-5. EB-5 is a job creation program. And quite frankly, this bill would change a lot of things. But what this bill would not change is the fact that still 10,000 visas are available to EB-5 applicants every year. I think Rebecca raised a great point. If you're thinking long term, 10,000 visas are just maybe 3,333 investors per year. So we definitely need more, as Mona mentioned, especially when this country is recovering from the economic and pandemic crisis. We need more jobs, we need more foreign investments, and we need more visas in order to do so for EB-5 job creators.
So Lee, again, I can agree with you more. We please, for all our listeners out there, get on to change.org. Sign the petition. We need job creation. We need economic stimulus here in the country.
You're absolutely right, Rebecca. And for those listening to EB-5 Investment Voice right now, we invite you to add your voice to this change.org petition. We're going to include a link of it right in the podcast player of choice, right on your mobile phone, or if you're listening on the website, there's a link right below. Help us save the EB-5 program, and well, all employment-based visas, really, and protect immigrant diversity. We've had a lot of input on this roundtable podcast discussion, so I want to thank you, Michael Harris, Tammy Fox, and Lee Lee for coming on today's EB-5 Investment Voice.
Thank you for having me.
Happy to be here.
Have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.